Welcome to the Rengineering YouTube and podcast, your weekly dose of Porsche culture. With Tech Talk, Heritage, the Ren Builds playlists, along with a massive dollop of waffle, we'll keep you entertained. So subscribe now on any podcast streaming service and YouTube. Welcome to the Rengineering YouTube and podcast, and welcome to another episode. I really need to change that intro because I keep saying, or it says anyway, your weekly dose of Porsche culture. And actually, as you're finding out, that isn't always true. There is a reason though. So there's always a reason as well. I keep making excuses for that. It's been a very, very, very busy time. So my car, my Porsche Cayman, is completely finished. Its first event being shown so far is at Porsche Bournemouth this weekend. I think it's the 5th or 6th. And that's going to be with Nineworks. Nineworks are doing a 20 years of Porsche Cayman. I thought, what a lovely opportunity it is to actually go and show that car for the first time publicly and tie it in with that 20 years of Porsche Cayman. So yeah, thanks to Nineworks for hosting. The car is actually going to be inside at Porsche Bournemouth under the lights. And I'm going to shoot I finished my project car episode, or part of that episode there. I'll be meeting up with the lovely videographer that I have, and we'll go and do some rolling shots and some audio shots and some drone footage and all that stuff. But actually the first part of that will be a walk around and a breakdown of everything that has been changed on that car, on my 981 Cayman. What else has been happening? So the 550 build, the Ren 550, the purpose for Rengineering really existing in the first place, the donor car for that has been acquired and it gets dropped off tomorrow. So this is being recorded on Thursday evening and that car gets dropped to me. I thought it was supposed to get here today. Yes, and it's not going to happen today, but it is going to be picked up first thing in the morning and then dropped over to me. So that then arrives tomorrow as well. So you can imagine there's been quite a lot going on in the background, me just working tirelessly on my car and then organizing the bits and pieces for the Ren 550 to kick off as well. So lots to do. And then on top of that, editing this episode. This episode is going to be a fairly short intro because the episode's a decent size. I think it's about an hour. And it's with Porsche Club Great Britain. Now, I think I mentioned that probably 5 or 6 podcasts back. Ran a live event. It was the last live event of 2024. It was at Porsche Club Great Britain, where we had a 987 that had been heavily modified, my 981 that was kind of 3/4 done, I would say, and everything's happened since to kind of finish it off, and I talk about that a little bit, but also a 718. Three very different approaches to modifying a car. My car, as you'll know if you've listened to this for a while, is mostly a styling exercise, a tiny bit of performance, but almost all of it is really kind of to bring out the emotion and kind of, you know, refine the car as best I can and make it something that it never could have been from the factory. That's not necessarily true of, say, Simon, who's got a 987, you know, that car he uses for sprints and hill climbs. Again, to approach that, it's a very different approach. And also Kai, who's kind of built a big power 718 2-litre. So yeah, three very different approaches to doing it. This tech talk, though, is really about helping you if you're on that journey. It doesn't matter if you've got a 911. The process or the kind of overall thinking is always the same. You know, it's about making sure that in the spirit of design for purpose, you have an understanding of what you're going to try and do with that car, and then you set yourself up, and you kind of, all the choices you make around modifying the car are in the spirit of what you've set out to do. So that's this episode. There is a studio audience. It was the first time I've ever ran a full audience in a kind of studio space. I think it was about 40 people there at the time. And credit to everybody that came out. It was a really crappy weather day. You know, we turned up. It was probably a good hour and 40 minutes for me to get there. And I think a couple of people had come out 3 or 4 hours worth of driving to get to the venue just for this episode. So if you're listening to this and you came along to that episode being shot, massive thank you to you. Thanks for all your interest and lots of questions. And it's particularly thank you to the handful of people that hung around afterwards and wanted to have a chat. So always lovely to do that. There's lots coming up this year. Next episode, I think I was going to do it in this episode, but it, like I said, it's quite a long one and I've got loads of going on at the moment, as you can tell. And I'm going to break down everywhere I'm going to be. I'm still waiting to hear back from Michelin, because the car, my car personally, is going to be shown on with the Michelin brand all year and their shows. So I'm just waiting to hear back what dates they are. Porsche Club Great Britain have also asked me to attend and be on their show stand as a feature for a number of events as well. So the car's going to be all over the place. Pretty much every Porsche event, you'll get to see it. But this episode isn't just about my car. It's a tiny bit about my car, but almost entirely about Kai and Simon. So I really hope you enjoy the episode. If you've got any questions, you can always leave all comments. You can leave those in Spotify or Apple Podcasts. If you're watching this, or you're going to watch this on YouTube, obviously there's the audio on this only podcast streaming service, but you can go and watch. And actually, I would encourage you to do so, because the video to this, it obviously helps, you know, paint the picture as to what we're talking about in terms of the cars. You'll get plenty out of it from listening to the audio, but absolutely go and give it a watch as well on YouTube. The Tut Hill episodes have gone great guns. That's been doing really, really well. So, you know, thank you to you if you've listened to and watched that episode. Lots of good feedback about that. Anyway, I'm going to leave it there. Enjoy this episode. I hope you do. This is far more representative of where the future of the podcast is going to be. Probably slightly fewer episodes, but far better quality. And Mick and I will be back for the odd waffle, but we really want to step the game up a little bit. So, yeah, enjoy, and I will see you back at the end. Have you ever thought about modifying your Porsche Cayman? Well, this episode is for you if you have. This is a live episode shot at Porsche Club Great Britain, and we're taking three very different versions of Cayman, the 987, the 981, and the 718, and looking at exactly how you do that. At the end, we'll take a Q&A as well, so there'll be lots of questions there. So join me for this live event at Porsche Club Great Britain. Welcome to the Rengineering YouTube and podcast, and welcome to another episode. Today is the last of the Rengineering live episodes in 2024. Thank you so much for joining me. This episode is at Porsche Club Great Britain in Moreton-in-the-Marsh. I'm joined by a lovely audience here as well. So thank you so much for coming, audience. It's been a pretty terrible weekend weather-wise, but today we're here to talk about modified Caymans. So not focusing on my car, not just yet anyway. The first one we're going to talk about is Kai. So welcome, Kai.
Hello.
Hello. Right. This is a 718 2-litre, correct?
Correct. Base model. Yeah, I bought it about 4.5 years ago from Porsche Portsmouth. Lightly used. And
so obviously standard, because they don't
it was standard.
Anything that's not, right?
But within a week it wasn't.
Okay.
And it has progressed for the last 4.5 years to where it is now.
Right. So when you started with this car, did you start with the intent of completely built, because this thing is a serious bit of kit, or was it an evolution over time? How did you get to where we are now?
Yeah, I just finished spending an awful lot of money on a 987, trying to make that go faster. And eventually you reach a limit with naturally aspirated engines. They just won't go any further. Mm. And so I wanted a turbo. And if I'm honest, this is all I could afford.
Right.
I'd like the 2.5, but I couldn't afford the 2.5. But I always knew I was going to wind it up, and thankfully turbos are very easy to add power to. I just didn't realize it would go this far. And I have to say, we're nowhere near finished.
Okay, so the spec when you bought the car then, did you have a particular spec in mind, or was it literally budget is the main thing here, and actually kind of going to get what I get in terms of spec and color and
choices? Yeah, I think budget was the biggest consideration, but also I had to have the base model because it's the lightest one.
Okay.
So I have a little bit of an OCD thing about cars will only be fast if they're light.
Yeah.
So I don't want all of the electric seats. I don't want all of the electric suspension. I wanted everything as basic as possible, and this is what we ended up with.
Okay. So first modification, what was that?
First modification was winding the turbo up.
Okay.
So from a standard 290-ish, it went to 380 instantly.
Wow.
And that kind of hit, you know, in one pass, just including a small modification to the exhaust, which was taking the cat out and replacing it with a race cat, gave us 380 instantly. And that just transformed the car. But as soon as you do that, nothing else is up to standards.
Mm.
So in order to make a fast car stop, you need to upgrade the brakes.
Right.
And if you upgrade the brakes, the suspension goes all springy. So I had to upgrade the suspension.
And you're a bit of an expert just to kind of cover this stuff. So Kai here is also a racing driver and has a speedboat and bikes and you name it, you've got it, right? So you were using some of your knowledge, I guess, from developing racing cars and then applying some of that knowledge to this. Is that correct?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I could have turned it into a race car. That would have been actually a lot easier.
Mm.
But I have to remember, this is 90% a road car that occasionally goes on track. So the first thing I did was upgrade all of the suspension with Ohlins road and track.
Why? Okay, right.
So rather than going for a KW Club Sport super stiff multi-adjustable kind of suspension, this has to take me down the road, this has to take me to the shops and the station, and sometimes it needs to go on track. And Ohlins is an absolutely fantastic platform for suspension, honestly. This thing will go down the road so much nicer than a standard Cayman.
Mm.
And when you start going faster, it just gets better and better. I don't want to dig myself a hole here, but the better it gets.
It's fascinating, actually, because we did a podcast episode with a company called Barnsport on geometry and suspension setup. And there's a common misconception, actually, which is that if you go and buy coilovers, your ride is going to decrease to a bouncing down the road, like a pogo stick, which is true if you buy the cheapest possible coilovers with barely any adjustment.
Or wind them to full stiff.
But actually, quality coilovers, like Ohlins, absolutely amazing, right? If you dial them in, you spend time setting them up properly, they're amazing.
Yeah. And the Ohlins road and track kit is specifically for the 718. So I'm not borrowing a spring that could be used on a 911 or any other car. This is specifically for this model. It was actually worked on using the Cayman T, which is this one.
Right.
That was a slightly lighter.
Yeah.
And so the settings were...
out of the box, great.
Out of the box, correct.
Okay.
It has 30...
damp and rebound adjust?
Damp and rebound, and also 30 clicks of stiffness in both directions. And so when I go on track, I can wind it right the way around, and it's completely flat. But when I drive home now, it'll be no harder than everybody else's car on the way back.
Roll bars? Anti-roll bars?
Anti-roll bars are the GT4 anti-roll bars, front and rear.
Yep.
All of the drop links.
And they're adjustable on three connections,
They're
points,
all adjustable
right?
on 3 points. They're in the middle setting at the moment. All of the bushings have been replaced by poly bushes.
Wow.
That's 36 different bushes underneath, I've counted. And the fun we had getting those off.
So how much of this work did you do, and how much of it was a company that's been supporting you doing this?
The majority of this work has been done by a company down in Southampton called Regal.
Okay,
Regal, quite well known. And they've also been helping me to develop things. Just recently, I've also been working with Ninemeister up in Warrington, I think they're based. And they also have some good bits and pieces. But most of the work has been done by Regal. The tuning's been done by Regal. The hybrid turbo is by Litco. You may have heard of them. They make hybrid turbos for some pretty crazy cars. But the key underlining element for me with this car is it has to go fast, but it has to be reliable.
Mm.
And so it's still, even in its current state, at 80% duty cycle.
Yeah.
So it is not stressed. and even on a hot track day, I get nowhere near 90%, meaning if anything did go wrong, I still have... a percentage of
For those of you listening and listening on the podcast streaming services, on any podcast streaming service or on YouTube, duty cycle effectively, it's the 100% is the absolute maximum it can take, the maximum performance it can deliver, but you don't want to go anywhere near that because you're right on the ragged edge. So you typically stay between 75 and 80% duty cycle. So your injectors, you want to stay well below so you don't get peaks and you don't get a meltdown and pistons melting and things like that.
Exactly.
But
right.
also, so it's really hard to balance when you're building a car continually, maxing out each thing and then sitting below that so there's some, you can rag the hell out of it and not going to kill the thing. So
absolutely.
So take me through, you talked about brake package. Brakes, what are they from?
So these are the discs from a 996 turbo made to fit mine. The standard calipers with DS2500 on the road pads.
Yeah.
I have even harder pads for the track. Braided brake lines, .5 fluids. As much as I can do within the standard parameters of wheel size, of course.
Okay, yeah.
I have 18-inch wheels with semi-slick tyres for the track.
Of course you do.
And so my caliper can't be any bigger than the standard.
Yeah.
The GT4 calipers would be lovely, but A, they're very expensive, and B, they don't fit.
Yeah.
So there's that.
So brake package, suspension. Let's get on to the party piece, mate. So, engine. So we've done a basic remap and a sports cat or a high flow cat. Where did you go from there?
Air filters, of course. So the standard sort of K&N panel filters that fitted in.
Yeah.
That wasn't enough. So we then went for a hybrid turbo. The turbo is rated at well over 500 horsepower. We're running it in low boost now at 450, 420 pounds-feet of torque, and water methanol injection, which not only cools the engine, but gives you another 20 horsepower due to the fact that methanol runs a higher RON rating than standard fuel. So when I drive this car, I'm actually driving 103 RON, super unleaded fuel, to keep the thing cool.
Absolutely.
It's also got an uprated charge cooler in the back. If you know the layout of these cars, the intake on the left-hand side is just air. Mm. The intake on the right-hand side is to cool the charge cooler. But it's a very tight package in the back there. So, you know, you have a frunk and you have a boot. Mm. And you have a small piece of metal in the middle, that's the engine. And everything in there has been uprated. So coil packs, spark plugs, air oil separator. I mean, right down to the minute details. Because I have to have it reliable. If I can't trust it, I can't drive it hard.
Yeah.
I change the oil every 1,800 miles.
Do you really? Wow.
I change the coil packs and the spark plugs every 3,000 miles. I change everything that could potentially have a weak link.
Do you know what I love about this as well? Is it looks to the untrained eye.
And that's exactly what I want.
Standard,
that's absolutely what I want. When I'm terrorizing GT3 RSs at the track and they look at this thing and think it's only a Cayman, that
gives
me
is the car broke? Is it me? Am I a bad driver? And actually, it's not. It's you being a bad driver.
It gives me an extremely good feeling. Yeah, I love it. Absolutely.
Amazing.
Love it.
Amazing. Yeah. So, what's next then? Because you've maxed out what you can get out of it at the moment. So, where are you going next with it?
The turbo would go even further, but my biggest problem now is fueling. So, nobody has developed any additional modifications for this car. There are no other 2 liters out there that are at 450, let alone my aim, which is to get to 600. So I found someone who will make me a turbo, no problem at all. Mm. What I can't do at the moment is deliver enough fuel to the thing to make it run. So I need uprated fuel, pump and injectors, and there is nothing out there. And nobody will help me to develop it, because what would be the benefit to develop one?
Yeah, you know what I mean? Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So we've looked at the 911 turbo injectors, they don't fit. Right. The fuel pump isn't compatible. We've looked at BMW fuel pumps. Nothing seems to fit the puzzle. Once that's cracked, 600 in nitrous and we're gone.
Wow. We'll wrap on interior, because one thing I'm surprised at actually is the interior is basically standard. And I know that's fitting of the rest of the approach to the car. How are you finding the Sports Plus seats? How are you finding, because I found them pretty, not great on the track. So how are you getting on with those?
To be honest, they're not as supportive as they could be. I'd love a set of GT4 carbon seats, but for £3,000, I'd rather buy a new turbo and make it go faster than feel more comfortable for 15 minutes on track. So there is no track option for this. Remember, it's still my daily driver.
So
if I drive this to Heathrow Airport and I'm pinned in a race seat, that's not a great experience either.
And if you have a partner that you want to take out and they're also pinned in a race seat.
She actually doesn't like going in it.
Right, okay, yeah.
I don't know why.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. The interior is pretty much standard. The only kind of giveaways are that I have two lights that light up next to the gear stick when I'm injecting methanol. So it's based on throttle position. Anything over 50% throttle delivers water methanol into the engine to cool it, but also to give it that extra pep.
We didn't talk about engine management, actually. So this is not on the standard, it can't be on the
standard. Standard ECU, yeah.
Wow.
Just remapped. It's been remapped a total of 7 times now. But
and it can cope with mixed fuels and it doesn't, no problem at all?
Absolutely
wow.
No problem at all.
Amazing.
Yeah, they're so over-engineered. I mean, we'll probably hear that all day.
Yeah.
Porsche build these things. You know, the biggest concern for a lot of people is the engine reliability. Mm. And what people fail to remember is this is the 3-litre engine out of a 911 with 2 cylinders taken off.
Yeah.
So the rods are forged, the pistons are forged. You know, those engines go to 1,000 horsepower. Mm. All I'm asking is a puny 450, right?
It's just a puny 450.
So it can take it.
Brilliant.
Absolutely, it can take it.
Amazing. Well, look, thank you so much, Kai. We're going to take a short break. So we'll be back with Simon and his car, and we'll talk more about his Cayman and what he's done then. Thank you so much, mate.
Thanks, mate.
And we're back. So this time we're going to talk about a totally different generation. A couple of moments ago, you will have seen Kai's 718 2-litre with ridiculous power. This is a different approach again. And this is a 987 generation Cayman. Simon, hello.
Yeah, hi Paul.
Hi. Good. So the first thing I noticed is a timing bar on the front of the car.
Yeah.
Some crossed out numbers on the side of the car.
You can't miss them.
You can't, can you? And you're dressed in Nijmeister gear everywhere. So
yeah.
Let's start with buying the car. What was it done? Have you worked on it yourself? Have you been collaborating? Talk me through from the moment you bought the car and what the approach was.
Yeah, sure. So unlike Kai, who we just heard from the last session, I didn't have a plan when I started with this car.
Oh, okay.
At all. I bought it as a road car 10 years ago, and I'd been in some other sort of interesting cars before that and just wanted to try what Porsche was like. This is the car I could afford and the car I sort of looked around for and settled on after a long period of looking. But yeah, it started very much as a road car and was at its time completely standard.
Mm.
So 987 generation one,
yeah.
Cayman S with a 3.4 engine.
Interesting. And actually there may be some 987 generation one owners here. 987 generation two, the safe car.
Yep.
987 generation one, the yep. less safe car. did you buy it perfectly working with no bore scoring or?
Yeah, so I'm very aware of that being an issue. I think you read a lot about
a lot
it
of when, scare you stories,
when
yeah,
you're researching. Yeah. You know, it's always the headlines you gravitate towards, and I think it's difficult not to have that in your mind.
Mm.
But this car I found was relatively low mileage, and although it only had a part service history, I took it up to Porsche Silverstone,
yeah.
and they gave it a thorough check over for me prior to buying
health,
it.
Or?
Absolutely,
really?
Yeah, every box ticked. So I wasn't expecting that, clearly with a part history service car.
Yeah.
But Porsche Silverstone were fantastic. They went through the car back to front and gave me that comfort.
Great.
So from there, it started to be used on the odd track day. So I was using it predominantly as a daily driver,
yeah.
and then it ventured out onto track days. But keeping in mind what you said about the engine, my first modification to it was to keep that engine in good health.
Mm.
So it's got a deep sump kit on it. It's got an extra third radiator.
This is based on the fact you were taking it on track, and
this
is more about, I don't want to just end up grenading my engine. What can I do to prevent that happening? And that's the modification you start with.
Okay. So, and it's also got a low temp thermostat on it. So those engine management mods keep that engine working within its tolerance and look after it on a day when you're going, you know, going around the track.
How did you find it pre any kind of big upgrades for the engine? Was it competitive on track? Was it showing weaknesses or kind of or vulnerabilities that you were kind of cautious of, or were you able to just smash the crap out of it as the moment you wanted?
I've not really bought the car to smash the crap out of it. Absolutely not. But the fact of the matter is that, you know, the first generation came and he's slightly underpowered.
Mm.
But where it does make up for that is its balance.
Right.
And the performance on the track, and particularly certain tracks, it does drive extraordinarily well.
Give me the tracks that you're kind of like.
So my favourite track with this car is Goodwood,
undoubtedly. That's a fast circuit.
It's a fast flowing track,
yeah.
But it's not a car that will give you surprises on that track.
Right.
There are certain cars which, you know, will remain nameless, I've driven before, which kind of get you up to limit and then decide they've had enough. This car will not do that. Its balance is superb. And partly, because the engine is relatively underpowered in terms of the later cars that came after it, certainly. But in terms of performance, it's absolutely perfect for that sort of environment where you want the balance and the predictability.
So we've got engine safety.
Yes.
Where do we go from there? What was the next step that you took with this?
So those track days and the conversation that I had with various people I met through Porsche Club and the track days themselves led me into sort of thinking what next with the car. And I think where most people sort of read and look to is competitive motorsport. Now, let's be clear, I'm not about to enter into the Boxster Cup or anything such like that, but hill climbing and the Porsche Club Speed Championship is a really good foot in that camp.
Okay.
And it allows you to take your car into competitive motorsport, so time motorsport, and to perform against other Porsche marks and makes. So, I've been competing in the championship for a couple of years now.
Okay.
And the car competes in the road car class. So
that's
important because in terms of the modifications you can and can't do to the car, but also the Porsche Club is at Speed Championship is regulated by power rating at the moment. So
Fine, okay.
we have four grades of power. this fits into class two. So you're able to compete on a relatively level playing field when it comes to performance on those sprints.
So what does that limit you in terms of other, if your engine's got to be power limited, is it the same controlled in terms of suspension's got to be factory, or can you play with that?
So there's certain
brake package?
Yeah, there's certain things you can and can't do within the regulations, and the regulations will change and continue to change as we seek to get parity throughout the championships for the various cars that run in it. The idea is, of course, is for the field to be as close as you can together. You don't want anybody coming into the championship and blowing away all the other competitors in one particular field. So within this road car class, there's certain things you can do. You can swap the seats out. I haven't chosen to do that for reasons of comfort, for racing seats. I'll swap the steering wheel out. It's got a quick shift gear kit on it, so the time between shifts is a little quicker. The steering wheel also enables me to get a bit more control on the car, including the hairpins, which in hill climbing is pretty essential. But in terms of standard power, it's at, apart from a plenum on the back, which gives it a bit, allegedly, it's probably lost what it had from the factory originally to make it back. But but in terms of the car, it's running standard power. And in that road car class, it's in the bracket between 280 and 350. So there are more powerful cars in the bracket, but it performs well in that bracket.
Now, you're on road wheels and tyres, right?
Yeah,
so I'm guessing you swap those out for something.
No, I don't.
You don't?
No, I don't, because I run this car in days like today, and at Castlecombe in the wet, you do not want to be on fairly slippery set of tyres. And because it's running in the road car class, it means I can't drive it up on a trailer. That's one of the rules that you, you're held back by in some respects. Now, clearly, there are highly modified cars within the championship, and those people are allowed to swap the wheels out. But no, I run it on what it's seeing here today, which is Michelin Pilot 4Ss, which I'm absolutely
magnificent,
blown away by the performance. Now, bear in mind, you, on a hill or a track or a sprint circuit, you're not running for more than about a minute at a time. So it's important you've got a really good, compliant tyre to work with the car. Putting a really hard slick on it is
the window of tolerance is quite limited.
Well, for a 30-second or 60-second run on the track, it doesn't really make much difference, I can promise you. But yeah, it's a 4S and a 4S all the way for me.
Nice, brilliant. Plans for the future? What are you kind of like, this is dialed in? The geo, I'm guessing you've got a decent geo that's been done on the car.
Yeah, I mean, you have to be aware when you're doing the geo on the car that you're setting up for a really different environment. So a sprint around a circuit versus a hill climb are two very different environments. So you're going for a general purpose look. I mean, you can tweak the car between events, but I choose not to do so. It's got a safe midpoint for me that keeps the balance and the drivability in the car. But in terms of next modifications, there's a few things you can still do. So at the moment, it's got a fiberglass bonnet on it.
I know. Do you know what I noticed a minute ago? I was having a quick walk around before we started shooting, and I was like, that is a stick-on Porsche emblem, which immediately made me think, well, is that, what's that then? So you can swap body panels out for composites?
Yeah, you can.
Okay.
Yeah, you can. And as long as your running gear is standard, and the car itself around it has the same silhouette of the car, so you can't add big wings and planes on it, then that's within the regulations. Now, the weight limit for Speed Championship is around, I think it's from memory, it's 1,050 kilos. There's no way you're going to get a standard road going Cayman down to that weight. But you can do a few bits and bobs. So it's got the radio taken out of it. It's got the lighter steering wheel. It's got a few bits and pieces removed around the car. And the next thing for me is getting that rear screen off and replaced with a plastic plexiglass, because there's a big load of weight in the back of the car. Also a big load of weight here, which I need to work on as well.
You can say anything about that.
But, you know, the first good bit of advice you get is, you know,
strip you off first.
The driver work first rather than the car. But in
terms
of balance,
naturally short and you've got an advantage.
That helps. But, you know, there's a bit you can do to the car well within the regs. And, of course, those regs, as I said, do keep changing. You know, in the coming years, we're talking about power to weight rather than just power. So you don't always need to go so far if you're managed by those criteria, but it'll be interesting where the club takes the regulations in the coming years.
Brilliant. Well, look, thank you so much, Simon. Very different. So we've had big power. We've now had less power, but more weight focus to try and get that balance right and make it great on track and great competitive. We're going to wrap up on my car, which is, again, a completely different approach. So massive thank you, Simon.
Thank you.
And we'll catch you up in a minute.
Brilliant. Thank you. Brilliant.
Well, right, so we've covered the 987 generation and this 718 generation. Interestingly, both base model cars. So we're going to wrap this part of the podcast up, part of the video up, with my car. We're coming to the end of the process of modifying my car. We're not quite at the end. That's going to happen in the new year prior to the next show season. But as we're here, why not go through my car as well? So this is a 981 generation 2.7. So again, a base model car. I bought this in 2019, a vanilla car. So I kind of the same as the other guys, actually, limited on the amount of money I had for the car, was less bothered that about things like leather, extended leather, but I did really want some of the driver's stuff. So spec of the car is sports chrono, Porsche Torque vectoring, PASM, Sports Plus seats, but apart from that, it was pretty basic. From there, I had that car for probably 2.5-3 years and decided in my wisdom that actually really what everybody wants is a 911. So I sold this car, this exact car, to a lovely chap who I still speak to, and went out and bought a 2018 911 Carrera T. That car lasted 8 weeks. I loved it. It was a great car. I wasn't a big fan of turbos. I didn't like the lag. And also, I found that actually, for the money that car cost, which was, I'm quite happy to say, £75,000, this car was less than half the price, and I reckon it gave me almost all of the enjoyment that the 911 gave me. So what did I do? 8 weeks later, I phoned the chap that I'd sold that car to and said, I want my car back. And then I quickly phoned up a couple of different dealers and said, okay, what would you give me for a 911 Carrera T? They said, not very much, sir. I panicked and said, well, okay, let me figure this out. But I was so in love with this car before I even modified it that actually whatever it's going to cost was going to be worth it. Managed to do some wrangling and it didn't cost me too much money in the end. And I ended up buying this car back. But I bought it back then knowing exactly what the plan was. And the plan was to come up with a Sonderwunsch car or a, what you know, inspired by Singer, inspired by Paul Stevens, some of those amazing car builders out there, but also my take on what that would look like. So where do we start? Absolutely not by the by power. This car has been around the Nürburgring. It's been on the GP circuit of the Nürburgring. It's thousands of miles around the Alps. I don't need more power. So that wasn't a thing. I'm massively into detail and I really love OEM Plus. So this car didn't have these bumpers. The seats were totally different. So it's got now got GTS or sport design bumpers. This is going to be difficult now for me to remember all this stuff. But even little things like these PDLS headlight washers, they were chrome. Ugh, gross. That had to go. One of the things I really loved actually about my 911 Carrera T is they've got agate grey accents on the car. So rather than put this back together again and leave it with black, because it comes with sort of standard plastic, I had those painted to match my Carrera T as a bit of a nod to the history of the car. Same with things like the indicators. Some people go, why have you got orange indicators? Well, actually, I love early 70s 911s, and I wanted to pick some of that historic stuff and bring it into a semi-modern car. Without it looking too cheesy. Now, so for some people, like all modifications, if they're styling choices, it's not for everybody. Some people love the massive whale tails. That is not for me. So basically, the car, the idea is you could walk past this at a show and you probably wouldn't notice anything. But then you get into the detail. So Carrera GT gear knob that's been custom made for me. The seats were removed and I worked with a company called, Dave the Trimmer. Dave did me a Singer set of inserts with the grommets, the same you see on Singer. Seat backs now have green Alcantara, which when I was going through that process was not going well with Dave. He thought it was going to look terrible. It doesn't, by the way. The steering wheel is from a GT3 off a 991.2 generation car. One of the things I found, actually, was driving around the Alps, messing with the modes, and you've got it on the center console, which I found quite distracting. On the later generation cars, you've got the dial actually on the steering wheel. So I brought that into this car, so now I can change modes directly from the steering wheel. In terms of the rest of the interior modifications, the lower half of the dash, all the dash was plastic originally. All of the dash parts have come off, and then I bought GT4 dash parts, which were a grey Alcantara. That's now on there. The plastic trims you get across the middle of the dash as well, they've gone body colour to try and bring some of that body colour into the cabin. GT4 RS panels on the engine cover, so you'll see those. They're black rather than silver. Exhaust is from Sport Design, sort of design tech from Design 911. They're a great company to work with. Wheel package is a Boxster Spider wheel or the 718 4-litre GTS painted in satin aurum. Brake package is a 718 GTS with a bell and rotor from Gyrodisc. And I asked Carbotech, who are big in the BMW scene, to make me a set of ceramic pads for this car because I hate brake dust. It drives me nuts. In original Porsche parts, you get brake dust everywhere. So brake dust free. Braking performance. Driving here this morning was terrifying because there's no heat in the pads. But on a track or kind of spirited driving, they're pretty good. And in the dry, they're good. Tyres are always Michelin. I work with Michelin and Michelin have been brilliant. Thank you, gents. I really appreciate your help. And I wouldn't change anything from that. Quick question, has anybody driven here with Cup 2s today? No, thankfully, because that would have been a disaster. 4Ss were okay. Cup 2s would have been a nightmare. I think that pretty much brings an end to that. So lots of GTS 981 generation parts on this car. Like I said, the intent is for this to be OEM Plus. Nod to Singer, nod to Paul Stevens. Now, moving forward, there's only a couple of modifications left before this car's finished, and I move on to the big engineering project. And the cap is from a company called Goldleaf Performance, and I'll be working with Goldleaf. This episode and all of the 2025 episodes are sponsored by Goldleaf Performance, and we're working together to introduce the GT4 RS full intake system into the car. So those side windows will go. We'll have the ducts that will pump air straight into the engine. I don't have any carbon fiber in this car. I don't intend to have any carbon fiber. The Goldleaf Performance stuff is all absolutely beautifully made, but they will also, the side intakes, although they are carbon fiber, will be painted agate gray to match. And then that leaves the last thing to do, which is gonna be done this winter, which is 718 side skirts. They basically look the same and you'll see those. These are 981 generation, but they've got a slight kick out of the bottom, and I'll use 718 Spider intakes, again, painted the agate grey. So this car's going to be featured in, I think, 3 or 4 magazines next year. It was on the Michelin stand at Megaphonics Boxing Gas this year. And that's pretty much it. That wraps up my car. But I'm going to ask Kai and Simon if you can join me back now, and we'll start thinking about your questions, if you have any questions. Lovely audience. So, if we can sort of park ourselves around here, that would be great. So you guys have listened to us ramble on for the last 45, 50 minutes. Does anyone want to ask any questions? There's one at the back. Okay, so this is a microphone. It's not going to make you louder. It's just going to record it for the podcast. So I'll hand this back. And if someone else has got a question, please just pass it around yourselves.
Okay, I've just got one for Kai. Do you actually race or compete in the car, or is it track days and road work?
So I race other cars, and this is just a track car. Yeah, yeah.
Purely as a matter of interest, because obviously it's set up, and that sounds like a pretty nice car. What did the car originally cost you, and what does it cost you to get it to where it is now? Approx, not to the last penny or detail.
You never want to ask that question, really.
Indeed,
because
I know that
to see this.
There are no wives in here at the moment, so we can admit this.
I bought the car used for just under 40. It was a great deal from Porsche Portsmouth. Adding everything together, including labor, and that is as expensive as the parts, I have to admit, I'm at about 25. Okay. But remember, this is over 4.5 years I've never had 25,000 to spend on the car. Very rarely do I have any thousands to spend on the car, but these are all in little pieces and slices, you know? So the turbo costs X and the labor is Y. Well, that's one thing that I've done over a 6-month period, you know?
And with the labor, are you doing a lot of the labor? Are you paying labor?
So I help. Whether the garage think I help or not, I'm not sure. I'd like to learn about all of this stuff, but I genuinely don't have the engineering prowess. So most of it is done by rather expensive people at £100+ an hour who know what they're doing, to be honest with you. Yeah.
The final one on the cost is obviously you're topping up on a yearly or 2 or 3 yearly basis to make sure everything's still working. What does that cost on a yearly basis, just keeping it as fresh and as safe as you want it to be, approx?
Not as much as you think. So on an annual basis, I'll probably change the oil once or twice. I don't do masses of miles. I buy all my oils from Opioils. You may have heard of them, you may not. It's 6 litres of Mobil 1, so whatever that costs, plus the oil filters. It's things like spark plugs and coil packs that do cost money, but I buy those direct from Porsche. It's hundreds of pounds, it's not thousands of pounds. It would cost me more to run an expensive GT model than it does mine, to be fair, but I don't do many miles.
With the coil packs, obviously it would be unusual for all to fail at the same time. Why wouldn't you just keep a spare coil pack and then change it if and when necessary?
I think it's just I'm so anal and fastidious about this stuff that I'll do all of them when I do all of them and keep doing them all. By the way, these are the coil packs from the GTS 2.5 model because those are the biggest coil packs from a turbo motor that I can get. The spark plugs, we had to try 8 different types at 8 different temperatures to find the one that suited the car for what it's doing, the power it's delivering. So, you know, I pay for all of those 8, but 7 of those are in the bin. So that's how the costs rise, unfortunately. So I'm looking at a car that's probably cost me 65,000 to buy. I might get myself into a GT4 used at that sort of money, but I haven't got 65,000, and a GT4 is a lot slower than my car, so why would I?
Yep, fine. Very interesting. Thanks very much.
Any other questions? One at the front there.
Hi, and another one for Kai. I've got a 987.2, which is in completely stock. Always been interested in remapping it. First of all, where would you advise getting that done? And two, what are the risks in terms of insurance? Breaking the car at all? Does it add any additional risk to the car?
I'm the wrong person to put you off because I would say do it 100 times. Remember, you get very low gains from a naturally aspirated car compared to a turbo. You can't wind the engine up. You need to sort the breathing out first, so it's intake and exhaust. Then you can map it, and you're probably going to get 20 or 30 horsepower on top of what you've got already. Most of that power will be made further up the rev range. So unless you're prepared to put in the effort, you know, sourcing suspension, sourcing brakes will make your car that much faster than doing that kind of engine work. I spent nearly 20,000 on my 987.1 and I got 60 horsepower out of it. I got a remap for the turbo that cost £700 and I got 100 horsepower out of it. You know, that's the difference between NA and turbo. Always tell your insurance company absolutely everything you do. My insurance company has a whole page assigned to everything I've done, and you have to claim it because if the worst happens and they spot something in there,
yeah, agreed.
You're out.
Absolutely, 100%.
Yeah.
Good. Any other questions? Yep, another chap.
You mentioned...
another one for Kai? Come on, guys.
I apologise. Yeah. Yes, you mentioned a lot of modifications, engine and suspension and brakes. You didn't mention anything about the transmission. Now, a bit of a pitfall, really, with the Getrag box is the torque capacity. Have you had any specific problems with the sort of power, particularly the torque output of the engine?
To this point, no. Up to 400 horsepower, I had a standard clutch and a standard flywheel, and everything in there seemed fine. I'm not aggressive with those things. I've done 0 to 60 runs. I've never been to a drag strip. You know, when you drive fast on track, you're shifting gears fast, but you're not being hard on the stuff. Just recently, and it's something I forgot earlier, I've had the upgraded clutch, which is now rated at 500 horsepower and 600 newton meters. So it's well within its capabilities. And the single mass flywheel just gives the engine that little extra flick. So I am now up to uprated standards, uprated things. The gearbox again, touch wood, it'll take it, providing the clutch is feeding that power into the
gear. Yeah.
And you're not being an arse with it.
Yeah, that's what I'm sort of interested in, really, because I say the transmission in particular is torque limited, really. That's the problem, really, with limitation of GT4s,
yeah,
you know, that they can't
put more
torque.
The PDK is actually rated at considerably higher torque, so for those people who have got a PDK, they can take it even further. But
understood, yeah.
Yeah. I think we're
interesting.
Okay.
Thanks.
Yeah. Don't do any drag strip stuff, though. Mm-hmm.
They're not the right car for that anyway, right? Go and buy a Supra or a GTR. Any other questions?
Oh, good.
Composite front lid.
Yes.
Where did you get that? What did it cost? And what was the weight saving?
Good question. Kai asked me about the weight saving earlier on, and I can't remember what it is, which is mildly embarrassing. But I bought the lid from a business called Club Motorsport, who are based in Dudley, and they make them to order. You can either have fiberglass or carbon fiber, and I think they say on their website they don't make them for looks. It comes out of a standard buck though, so the fit is good with some minor adjustment. As you can see, I have mine painted, and somebody commented earlier on, it's a lot easier when you've got a black car, you don't always notice the shut lines in the same way. But I wanted it to look standard, I wanted it to look in keeping with the car, hence why I had it painted the same colour, but yeah.
If there's no, I'll do a follow-up. Yeah, you can remember the cost. When you've been doing your hill climbs, have you noticed over the front axle that weight reduction?
Good question. So the car, at the point we were discussing earlier on, was how the car's set up. And because the Speed Championship visits very different venues throughout the year, you've got to be a generalist. So it's quite hard to say when you go to a specific hill or a specific circuit what difference it's making. But overall, you do know, and you can see from the cars you're competing against, that the lighter cars go faster with the same engine. So that's a broad rule that works across every single track, every single hill. In terms of setup, some people have got more time to deliver more setup into the cars for the individual events, and they do that. But because mine's in the road car class, I like to leave it standard. I don't have the time to play around with it all as much as I would like to. So it stays as it is for the season. I'm absolutely convinced that the Cayman is a well-balanced car to start with. So what you adjust at one side, you need to make sure you're also adjusting from the other. So hence why I talked about the next step in the road as being potentially taking some weight out the back of the car. But in terms of the overall performance, getting the weight down, even if you've got an underpowered engine, will always do you well on a hill. Will always do you well on a hill. And for a track, for that matter, to a certain degree.
Good. Just behind you in the chat.
Simon, just picking up on Jeff's question, have you done anything with your clutch and transmission? Because obviously your motorsport canes it a bit.
Yeah, it does. Now, I had the unfortunate incident of my clutch going the day before I was due to compete at Goodwood 2 years ago. That was an expensive day out, but Autofarm and Bista were brilliant at helping me resolve that. They worked late into the night and made sure the car was available for me the next day to drive. And it also gave me an excuse to bring it back and do some more modifications for it. So when things do go wrong, it can get a bit sort of looking deeper into the catalogue to see what the next steps are. But touch wood, I've never had any problems with it. The clutch went because of natural life, John. It had its time. It had not been replaced since I'd had the car originally. And bear in mind, that was probably 8 years by the point I got to that date. So it certainly served its life and served it well. You can, as Kai's done, step up to a lightweight flywheel, single mass flywheel, but I've chosen not to do that. I replaced everything like for like with Porsche OEM parts when it did fail on that particular time. And I think, whilst the car does get a lot of pressure through the clutch and gearbox, it doesn't get sustained pressure for a long period of time when you're doing sprinting and hill climbing. We talked earlier on about the runs being up to sort of 60 seconds to go. It is very fleeting, and the car is, to the conversation we've had earlier, over-designed in that respect. It's built to withstand it, in my view. And that's not just my view. Kai shared that earlier on, but the people I've worked with, Autofarm, have also said that too. So I'm still running it standard and plan to do so.
There you go. Good. Any other questions? I think that's it. Last chance? Good. Look, I'd like to... Oh, there's one. I was about to wrap up, sir, and you just go for it anyway.
So just a general Kerman question. I've got a 987 Gen 2. I used to have a Gen 1. I've got an automatic gear, PDK. It's small. It's well quick enough for UK roads. And it makes a great noise. So what am I missing by not going a bit more upmarket with the later Gen Caymans? Am I missing anything? All three of you. Everyone in the room, perhaps.
Yeah, well, that's true as well. I mean, I think they're all, personally, this is, they've all got their merits, right? So the earlier 987 generations, you got hydraulic steering. They're a smaller package. They're arguably, if I was to, and I've said this loads of times on the podcast, the car for me to watch is the Cayman R, the 987 Gen 2 Cayman R. If I could find one of those in peridot green with a manual transmission, with buckets, and you could stick that in a box, that would be the one for me. So, but that's to say, I drive a 981. I've driven basically every variant of 718, and they all have their own merits. So whatever Cayman you've got, whatever generation, whatever type of that, I think they're basically all brilliant for their own thing. Guys?
You know, I'm never going to say no to a 987, am I? Because that's what I'm driving. I'm a big fan of the car, both in terms of its footprint and the way it drives the balance. I think it's absolutely superb. You know, the criticism I perhaps would level at it is in terms of power, and Kai's shown you can address that absolutely. Power to weight is I think what you've got to keep in mind, and that's the most important thing. It's all well and good having loads of power, but you've got a lot of weight in the car, you're still sort of relatively hamstrung. But again, you know, my view is it depends on where you use the car, what you want to drive it, where you want to drive it, and you know, those various combinations. The Porsche car is infinitely modifiable. You don't have to spend too long looking through Porsche Post to see that there's several things you could buy to change the car. But it's important that I think that, despite having said that I didn't, you start out with a general guidance about what you want to do with the car and where you take it in the next journey. For me, modifying a 987 was an easy decision because the car was cheaper to start with. And I didn't feel like I was going to spend money on a very expensive car that I think might have put me off, you know, doing so much with the cars I'd done. But let's be clear, you can take everything off the car and put it back to standard. All the original bits and pieces are still in the box in my loft. If I chose to do so, I could take that car back to standard. Having gone on a podcast and tell people I thrash up and down hills, they may not want to buy it, but it can be returned to standard. And again, that's the great thing with Porsche. The menu of parts you can get and the option for swapping them in and swapping them back out is pretty infinite when you start, you know, looking through those catalogues.
Yeah, I mean, we're all different. My affliction is speed. You know, I just want to go fast, and you can't do that in a standard car. It's just not fast enough, and it never will be, to be fair. And I've been involved in motorsport for years and years and years. I particularly like endurance type of races, so Le Mans. I've been there, you know, almost every year since I was about 10, and the cars that win are Porsches, you know, and they've won more than anyone else. They're the winningest, which I never knew was a word before. And that's for a reason, you know. I've had a lot of friends who've had different cars, you know, Aston Martins and Ferraris and all those sorts of things, and they've all broken down. And Porsches don't, touch wood, I've said it now. But for the majority, they're just so over-engineered. You know, a good standard Porsche is a fantastic car, better than most other things, and I'll never go back. And I think there's also a lot to be said for brand loyalty. You know, once they've got you, they've got you. You know, I made my wife have a Porsche Macan. She wasn't going to have a bloody Land Rover or something else. You know, it was going to be a Porsche. And she'll never go back either. And there's all those other little details. You know, you take a car for service and you've got that sort of aftercare kind of thing. And it's all encompassing, really. So, yeah, I mean, there should be no compelling reason to modify. But once you do, it's a hell of a lot of fun. It's just a hell of a lot of money.
Very good. Any other questions? Silence. Okay. Well, thank you so much. I've really appreciated everybody's time here, especially Kai and Simon. You guys have been brilliant. Thank you so much. Big thank you to Porsche Club Great Britain for hosting today. And most of all, a big thank you to the audience that have come out in this awful weather as well. So give yourselves a big round of applause. Thank you so much for your time. We'll see you next time. Take care. Bye-bye. Well, that wraps up this episode at Porsche Club Great Britain. What an amazing thing to have a crowd around here, you know, pinging questions backwards and forwards. Big thank you to Kai and Simon, as I said before, and to the crowd that came out on this pretty dreary November day. Don't forget, head over to any podcast streaming service, at Rengineering there, at Rengineering on YouTube, and at Rengineering UK on Instagram. And I will see you next time. Loads more episodes to come, so stay tuned. Take care for now. Bye bye.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that episode. Like I said, this is the third of the live events for 2024. And the one that, yeah, without any real kind of experience of, I had no idea whether I was going to lock up and in the face of a load of people staring at me, expecting me to kind of run this Top Gear style episode, whether it's going to work or not. Thankfully, apart from a couple of bits of verbal diarrhea, it seemed to come pretty well together. So yeah, thank you so much for listening. I hope you've got plenty of opportunity now. The weather, particularly in the UK, is definitely improving. I've seen lots more cool cars out and about. But if you got the opportunity, go and do that. If you haven't, or you're in a different part of the world, I hope you get the opportunity to at least talk about cars and interact with people, and start planning. If it's heading to winter for you, it's a great opportunity to start doing that work ready for next season. So thank you again for listening, and I'll see you next time. Take care for now. Bye-bye.